Okay. Just to go over a brief outline, what I'm going to do today is go over the two data sources we use to look at influenza-like illness and vaccine uptake in Michigan. Then I'm going to discuss some of our previous strategies and then what we did the last two flu seasons at the Michigan Department of Community Health. So the Michigan component of the CDC Outpatient Influenza-Like Illness Surveillance Network, or ILINet, is made up of 92 sentinel sites throughout the state. And the goal of this program is to determine when, where, and what flu activity is occurring in the general population. The data that is collected by sentinel sites are the number of patients with influenza-like illness in five age groups, and then the number of patients that these sites see for any reason. Sentinel sites also submit specimens for respiratory virus culture to our State Bureau of Labs. Just a couple limitations of this program. The case definition for influenza-like illness can frequently pick up other respiratory viruses that might be circulating, and it does also a voluntary reporting system, so some sites are better at reporting than others. The Michigan Care Improvement Registry is our web-based birth-to-death immunization registry. In June 2006, we removed the less than 20-year age restriction, making it a true lifespan registry. And then MICR data, I'll refer to it MICR for the rest of the presentation probably, is collected via the various methods listed on the slide. A couple limitations with the flu data that's entered into MICR. We do have better information for younger children than adults because most childhood immunizations are required to be entered into our registry within 72 hours. Even though it's highly recommended for adult data to be entered into our registry, it's not mandatory, so that data isn't quite as good represented. As we all know, over the last year, community vaccinators such as pharmacies and urgent care centers played a huge role in vaccine distribution. However, not all of these sites put their data into our registry. We did see an increase in the last year, but we still have quite a bit of work to do there. So to look at Michigan-specific trends, from the 03-04 season to the 08-09 season, we look at influenza-like illness data from sentinel sites that also enter data into our registry. And then for the last two flu seasons, we're going to look at data from the whole state's ILINet program, and flu vaccination records were pulled for any provider that put data into our registry. And the reason for the difference is that for the 5 years of data, we had pulled that data for a previous study, but we're still able to look at the same trends for this presentation. So obviously with 8 years worth of flu data and only a 15-minute presentation, I can't go into each flu season, but what I wanted to do was just pull out one flu season and show you kind of how we looked at the trends. So I'm sure many people in the room remember the 2004-2005 flu season with the flu vaccine shortage, when almost half of the nation's flu vaccine was not delivered and guidance was changed and target groups were recommended. This year, flu activity peaked in mid-February, and overall, it was a relatively mild flu season. So just to take you through this graph, because you're going to see it more on subsequent slides, down at the bottom are MMWR weeks, with week 40 being the first week of October. The green bar chart shows doses administered by the sentinel site, and then the two lines, the blue is Michigan influenza-like illness, and then the red, I think, is the U.S. influenza-like illness. So a couple things to note here. You can see that 90% of the vaccine was given by December 18th, and then you also can see the two peaks in flu activity, with Michigan peaking the same time as the nation, however, a little bit higher. So in order to interpret that red line there, you can see that 5.4% of all patient visits to the sentinel sites were due to influenza-like illness. So I know this is a little bit busy, but I just wanted to show some of the overall trends that we looked at. So in the top left is the 2005-2006 season. On the right is 06-07. And on the bottom is the 2007-2008 season. And what you can see here are that doses are administered in that first 2 to 3 month window. And then the two lines, Michigan is in blue and the nation is in pink, you can see that flu activity or flu disease doesn't occur for a couple months later. So what you see from here is the overall trend, which we've talked about at numerous national immunization conferences and the flu summit, is that we're really missing an opportunity to get a lot more people protected from influenza. So what I wanted to do was look back at messages that we used during these flu seasons with a specific focus on extending the flu vaccination season. So in Michigan, we have multiple outreach and education opportunities for our partners. In 2007, we created a Flu Fighter Action Kit for healthcare personnel, which guided organizations on how to implement immunization campaigns. And in this, there's a specific focus also on extending the flu vaccination season. Our websites, they're very vast, and up at the top, you can see our Flu Vaccine for Everyone Every Year campaign, which we've had for multiple years, but we also have it included in our Extend the Flu Vaccination Season website. So on this website, we have monthly flu posters, which were created by my colleague, Courtney Londo, and these were created in an effort to extend the flu vaccination season. So we created these based on numerous studies that have shown that healthcare personnel recommendations play a role in whether or not someone receives a vaccination. And the purpose was to generate a dialogue between the provider and the patient. So in the top left, you can see the monthly posters for around school time. Down on the bottom, you see some for in October. You can see a Halloween one, a Thanksgiving one, bring your passing dish, not the flu. And these posters are available on our website. And then just a few more of the posters. To focus on extending the flu vaccination season, over in the top right, you can see catch spring fever, not the flu. And again, these were simple, straightforward vaccination messages that really prompted the provider and the patient to have a dialogue. So now what I want to do is look at the last couple of flu seasons and talk about what messages and strategies we used and then see how that impacted the data. So I'm not going to go into too much detail on the flu pandemic because we all know that it impacted surveillance, vaccine uptake, communication, a lot of our daily lives. But what I do want to focus on are that in both flu seasons, we know that flu vaccine was available much earlier, and there also was an increased number of doses available, with a record number of doses being available this current flu season, 163 million doses. So in Michigan, a few of the things that we carried over from past flu seasons but we tweaked for these seasons are we continued to promote our flu websites. We distribute a weekly newsletter, Flu Bites, and then a weekly surveillance update, Michigan Flu Focus. And then we also have a numerous number of education sessions. And in this, we have our flu module, which in the 2009-2010 flu season, we had over 498 nurse-led in-services, 49 physician-led in-services, and 8 regional immunization conferences with over 1,700 participants. So you can see with our flu education and our other various vaccine opportunities, we're reaching a lot of the providers and healthcare personnel throughout the state. A few more focuses that we did the last couple of flu season is with CDC's key points that they updated throughout the season. We always made sure and sent an update to our partners and providers and included any new flu information and highlighted some of the changes like you did as well so that they were up to date with the most recent flu information. We used a lot of our MICR data to give updates on flu coverage rates. And then we also in Michigan have a flu advisory board, which is made up of over 170 different people from the healthcare arena. And in 2009, we established work groups, and one of those being the healthcare personnel work group, which I'm going to focus on for the next few slides. So in Michigan, the healthcare industry plays a major role. Based on a recent report, the healthcare industry is the state's largest private sector employer, with over 500,000 people employed in healthcare and another 219,000 employed in our hospital systems. And based on what we've seen in different surveys and what we talked about today, you know, numerous surveys have showed that consumers are heavily influenced by healthcare personnel to receive their decision to get a flu vaccine. And then I wish I would have had Carla's presentation before based on providers' intent to recommend flu vaccine. But earlier in the year, NFID had a survey that said that a majority of doctors say that they do recommend flu vaccination to their family, friends, and patients. And then among those that received a flu vaccine, 76% said they received a recommendation from a healthcare provider. So with this, we focused on healthcare personnel in Michigan a lot the last 2 years, as it was done at the national level as well. We developed a letter that was sent to all hospital administrators throughout the state. It was signed by our chief medical executive. And what we did is we asked the healthcare the healthcare or the hospitals to take a look at their influenza vaccination policies. And this letter really helped a lot of some of our major hospital systems in Michigan to change their policies. Some went to employer mandates. And at our flu advisory board meetings, we encouraged the different places to be part of Immunization Action Coalition's Honor Roll for Patient Safety. And then we also had some of the sites come in and give presentations on lessons learned and how it worked for them. So just a few more points on what we did to target healthcare personnel. We discussed it at multiple vaccination meetings that we have throughout their state. When the policy statements were updated by many leading medical organizations throughout the year, we always kept everybody updated. We shared a lot of the data similar to what I showed on extending the flu vaccination season, and we highlighted the MMWR on healthcare personnel flu vaccination coverage rates. And then on November 30th, we had a joint press release with Michigan State Medical Society, and we urged healthcare personnel to receive their vaccination. We also vaccinated the president of the organization that day. And also, since it was November 30th, we made sure that it was important to continue to vaccinate and it wasn't too late to receive your flu vaccine. So what impact did some of these strategies have? Now, here's a look at the data, and we all know that there are multiple factors that play into each of the flu season. The bar charts, the blue are the doses administered this year. The red are doses administered last year. So you can see an increase in the number of doses administered by almost about 30%. However, there are obviously multiple factors that play into this, as I said. In Michigan, we required every provider that was an H1N1 provider to enter their doses into our registry, and a lot of those providers did carry over to the next flu season, so they're much more familiar with the registry. So some of this could be that we just have better reporting. Another thing to note on this slide are the two line graphs. So the purple is influenza-like illness activity. We know that it peaked earlier in the pandemic, and then that greenish yellow, I don't know what color that line is, that shows ILA activity this year, so we can see a much milder season and then flu activity peaking in the last couple weeks. So this is another way to look at the data, and what this is Michigan Care Improvement, MICR data for the last 4 years, and this is for all provider types that entered flu doses. So a couple things to note here. From the 2007-2008 flu season to the current flu season, we saw a 107% increase in flu vaccine doses administered and entered into MICR. And as the factors that I talked about on the last slide, you know, I know that plays into it, and we didn't figure out exactly how much, but we are seeing a big increase in doses administered. Also, instead of, as I focused on earlier, extending the flu vaccination season, we're actually seeing that peak shift quite a bit to the left. And more than likely, that's due to more doses being available and being available earlier, but it is a pretty marked increase that you can see there to the left. And then even though you can't tell on this slide, we did see about a 20% increase in flu doses administered after Thanksgiving from last year to this year. So this slide is just an overall picture. This is about 6 years worth of flu vaccine distribution or uptake data and then influenza-like illness. And what it shows is that in Michigan, like throughout the nation, we're seeing a lot of missed opportunities for flu vaccination with the doses being entered in the first couple months and then activity not happening until quite a bit later. So I know I covered a lot of information in a lot of flu seasons, but some of the trends that we did see that are, for the most part, provider immunization practices appear to have minimal change regardless of timing or severity of the flu season. You know, maybe we did see a little bit of change that last year, but overall you do see those similar trends. The provider immunization practices appear to have minimal change in spite of the ACIP target groups, which Carla talked about earlier. You know, more people are recommended to receive a flu vaccine, but we're still seeing that trend as well. The amount of vaccine available doesn't seem to impact some of the provider immunization practices. Even in the year of the shortage, we still ended up wasting vaccine. And this year, even though the flu season isn't technically over, I'm willing to bet we might have a few doses left over at the end of the flu season. And then also the message that we've heard numerous times, it's really extremely challenging to vaccinate everyone in the current 2 to 3 month immunization window. So moving forward in Michigan, we're going to continue to focus on the healthcare industry because we really feel that we can get the most bang for our buck in this in this area because, as we mentioned before, educating this population trickles down to their patients. And, you know, if they're practicing what they preach, then we really want to focus on continuing to educate healthcare personnel. In the last few years, we've sent out a lot more pertussis messages, and included in these to healthcare personnel, we always include our influenza messages as well, so trying to cover all of our bases there. And then healthcare recommendations are included in all our education sessions. And as we all know, it's very challenging to create targeted flu messages when each season is very special and unique. We've also talked about at the State Health Department to use our registry to track healthcare personnel vaccination rates. So being able to see who needs more attention or different areas of the state is something that we'd like to focus on. And then we're going to continue. We have a great source of data with both our registry and the ILINET program. So we're going to continue to look at the data and try to impact providers in that method as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We do have time for any questions or comments for our speakers. And I'll go ahead and just ask a small question, Carla. This one's for you. So you did your survey in September. I know a lot of us worked really hard to get the message out about the universal recommendation throughout the season. Will you be repeating the survey to see where we're at now?
No, unfortunately not. That was kind of a last-minute decision to use extra money we had left over from the surveys we had done in the last year. I mean, we're still doing surveys of healthcare workers, but it's personal vaccination. Right. We're not specifically looking at physicians. Unfortunately, it would be great if we could.
It would be great. And that was a very high number of providers you guys saw who incorrectly indicated that children under 6 months of age are recommended to be vaccinated. Do you have any thoughts on what that might be about? And I wonder how, I was actually wondering if on the survey how you used greater than or less than symbols, or if you spelled that out, because we know that sometimes that, believe it or not, even with physicians, they can misinterpret.
Yeah, we did use symbols. We did not spell it out. So,
but did you use symbols for all of them? You know, for all the options? Do you remember?
Yes. I mean, I think the only one that actually had symbols were the less than 6 months or greater than equal to 65, mm-hmm. and everything else was just, you know, 6 months to 18 years or whatever. That was a surprising finding. And unfortunately, we didn't, when we got to the questions about who do you recommend to, we actually, it was a flaw in the survey that we couldn't look at if they recommended to less than 6 months. I mean, we could have, but we didn't because we didn't really design the survey that way. And in fact, the only, one of the reasons that we asked about it was kind of to trip people up and break their thoughts so they couldn't just go down and check yes for every single age group. And mm-hmm. They actually had to think about it, so we didn't expect so many to actually check yes, you know, always recommended for that young age group. And so that could have been partly what happened, that they did just go down the line and check yes for every single age group.
Right.
But otherwise, yeah, I have no idea.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Yes.
In doing it. So mm-hmm. I'm wondering myself,
right.
The physician answered, of course, he may not know, but perhaps any medical assistant in the office.
Right. Yeah, hopefully that's true. And it's good that you actually look at that because we've actually talked about it. In most of our surveys that we do, we don't even ask about if kids less than 6 months are vaccinated. Mm-hmm. So we really don't know how many of them are actually doing it incorrectly.
Mm-hmm. Other comments or questions? It was interesting, Sarah, to see that it was such a priority information need about subpopulations and prioritizing. Before this past season, we were in the field doing in-depth interviews with providers, asking them about their awareness of the universal recommendation at that time. It was in the summer, so it was low. But then also following up with, now that you're aware of it, would you recommend the vaccine to every patient that you saw? And the response was no, because, you know, not feeling confident enough that the supply is really going to be there to be able to do that. I'd probably wait and see and make sure we have enough vaccine to do that, because I don't want to offer my last dose of vaccine to a healthy 35-year-old and then have, you know, the pregnant woman come in after and not.
And the part of it was, if you remember, we had such a high proportion of those respondents who had participated in H1N1 where the subprioritization was, you know, really a strong focus. So I think this was a group that was really attuned to the idea of, hey, we have to be careful when we have scarce doses. What are we doing with
right.
this?
Right. Yep. And just lots of years of issues with supply. Any other questions or comments? Carlos.
Yeah. My question is for Crispy.
Mm-hmm. Two questions. How did you pre and post test the messages that you created? And then secondly, did you segment your audiences?
We didn't actually pre and post test our messages, so it was just more looking at different trends, and not. That's why I can't really say how much of an impact it actually had.
They're very beautiful materials, so they're really nice. Have you heard from your providers in your state how they prefer to get them? Are they willing to download them and
the
use
posters?
Them? Or yeah, because when we, that was one of the other things we talked to providers about, and, you know, they just really, what we've heard is they want them delivered to the office, and preferably not folded, so they have creases, and it's, you know, it's a tall order, too.
A lot of times, isn't it, Courtney is actually the one that created them, and how did you get those out? Because that was actually before me.
Okay. Well, we, at our fall conferences with 1,700 people, we printed some because we know that they like to...
Yes, be able to take them back. Okay, so at conferences, and, yeah.
We started putting them in our AIM toolkit because they don't always go online and download them.
Right.
We're trying to make color.
Right, yes. Thank you. Other comments or questions? All right. Well, just a couple of short announcements before I officially adjourn. The second immunization Q&A session will take place today during the lunch break at 12:30. Please feel free to bring your lunch with you. And an important change has taken place because of the overwhelming response to Monday's session. They've moved this to a larger room today. So today's Q&A will not be in Georgetown. It's going to be in the International Ballroom West. The next session will begin at 2 p.m. Please refer to pages 32 and 33 of your agenda to identify and locate sessions you'd like to attend. Please remember to take a few moments during your lunch break to visit the exhibits. And don't forget, there's a section of posters outside of the exhibit hall. Sarah's got a poster there, and they haven't been getting many visitors. So visit them and check out their posters. Also maximize the time by visiting the CE room located in the cabinet room. The conference planning team would appreciate knowing what you like and dislike about this year's conference. They will email everyone a link to the online evaluation next week. If you'd prefer to submit an evaluation of the conference on paper, please use the printed form included at the back of your agenda book. You can drop that off at the registration desk, the information desk, or in the receptacle at the back of the main plenary ballroom. So thank you all for coming, and let's thank our speakers for this great presentation. Enjoy the rest of your day and the rest of the conference.